Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. I'm really excited to have Nuri Kankaya speak today. We're a longtime Microsoft customer. I know you worked on Azure for a while, and now you're at Intel and very much into AI. And I was reading some stuff around quantum, which I'm really interested in, quantum computing. I'm interested to hear from you. But Nuri, go ahead and introduce yourself, please.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me on the show. So this is Nuri. I'm the Vice President for Commercial and AI Marketing at Intel. But as you said, before that, I was at Microsoft for a long time, 17 years. And out of that 17, 10 years, I was on the Microsoft Azure business. So moving on to the cloud space and then the AI space. So it's just like catching the wave constantly.
Amazing. Amazing. What are your thoughts around, like, how does quantum, like, what are the breakthroughs? Where's quantum computing now? And then what are the breakthroughs that have to happen? And then reflect that on AI. So that's a big question, but I'm very curious to hear about that.
Happy to. Because like today we are all discussing like the AI. Many people are discussing, including myself, AGI. But I want to remind everyone that there's also something big in the cooks, which is the quantum computing. And we were far away from like the quantum world. And for the listeners, like today, the digital world is binary. Like we have ones and zeros all the time. Like there's no in between. And the quantum really brings us all the shades of gray between the one and zeros. And there's like tons of possibilities. So think of this. Is going to generate like tremendous data and analysis opportunity for us to move to a bigger, which is, in my opinion, it's the artificial super intelligence stage. But before we go there again, today I will maybe start with one of the big challenges of AI is the training data. Like we have seen GPT-3 with ChatGPT. Everybody said, wow, this is mind-blowing. And 3.5, 4.0, 4.5, like everything was like an incremental, let's say, innovation. And we were really amazed with the capabilities of the GPTs. But at a point of time, we are running out of training data. This means that in order to train these models to become like more efficient, more precise on getting the intelligence, we need to provide more and more training data sets. And that's where quantum comes into the picture, because quantum can generate tons of information. And this is a real example. Like a couple of weeks ago at Microsoft Build Conference, Satya Nadella introduced a new project that has been done by the Microsoft Quantum team. So what it does is like they really ask the simple question, what can be the best coolant that we can use in our, let's say, data centers? And the CTO was on stage explaining this actually. And of course, the quantum really splits like tons of data because that's the value of having a quantum computer. So it tracks all the possible like molecule bindings and everything. And it just gives you trillions of parameters. One of them is maybe like a new coolant, which is really low temperatures. And then it will help us to save a lot of energy at data centers where AI is really consuming a lot. But they selected some of the data, they fine-tuned it. And it, again, it's almost a trillion different options, but one of them worked. So crazy, Kevin crazy. On stage said like, they found the new coolant. So like for like Microsoft, it's a big innovation. So they're using quantum for their own. And I bet like this is just a good use case of like where you can invent new things. This hasn't been possible before, but with AI, we are having the intelligence. with quantum, we are getting all sorts of possibilities together. If you merge this and become the quantum AI, it's infinite possibilities.
Yeah, no doubt. Quantum physics itself is mind-blowing. And then, like, just for the viewer to even know, like, quantum, instead of, like you said, ones and zeros, like, it can process in one cycle a million, because it goes to maybe a little bit sci-fi of parallel worlds. There's actually 1,000 worlds in the quantum world of all of us in different shapes and forms, all at the same time happening, and which is amazing. Where you were saying, yeah, like that one cycle is a million cycles instead of zero one, and it. But what's your point? I was at this show and I was talking to one of the Google researchers, and they're like, yeah, there's some serious advancements in the hardware, there's serious advancements in the software where they're trying to like reduce the errors. I think we're at like 97% or 3% error rate or something. I don't know. Has that improved or do we need it to improve to use it?
Yeah, it is going to definitely improve by time. The big thing was the innovation, because like in order to reach the quantum stage, like you need special hardware, and we weren't there yet. But like in the next 5 years, we will be there. And amazing. In order to really provide that, like you need a ton of energy, and we are potentially getting that with some small linked nuclear reactors that will really tune up all the energy that is required by AI and also for quantum, which means that we are heading there. There is a lot of course, quantum gives you all different states. So like for drug discovery, for example, you can ask a human, let's say, how can we cure cancer? And if that person is a really specialized person, that can give, like he or she can give you like a special maybe formula, but it's really bounded by the realities of the human. And again, I want to unpack that human, but if you think about our vision, for example, we don't see every spectrum of the light. We are so like simple like mechanisms that we can only see slightly part of it. We cannot see infrared light, for example. A falcon can use the infrared light and the light spectrum and really sees all the, let's say, bunnies moving in like a mile ahead and then jumps directly. And if you have a dog, again, like they can hear things which we cannot hear with our own like hearing. So imagine quantum can provide you a wide scale of spectrum on all senses, and it can create a data set which we cannot comprehend as humans. But then this means that I can find a cure for cancer beyond the human capability today. And again, this is fascinating, because like at this quantum level, we can just merge different realities from vision to hearing to data points. And again, at the molecular level, this is going to just create a new space for drug discovery. This is going to be big for healthcare. But if you combine this with AI, because quantum is not smart. So that's the problem with quantum. It splits like all this data without the meaning. And as you said, as of today, majority of it is garbage. It's not, you have to do analysis on, okay, is this a correlated data? But with AI, you can just create the connections between the data and you can just extract the right information, which is usable. So again, I'm super excited. And this is going to, of course, impact healthcare, manufacturing, retail, but many other industries which use vast majority of data.
So will the LLMs just run on quantum computers with no modification, or is there benefit to modifying them? Or
again, just to set the expectations, today, everything is at the research level, unfortunately. Like even Microsoft shared some of the outcomes, but they didn't share the fully cited white paper. Google is the same. Google is really investing on like the TPUs, and the TPU architecture is really designed to get the AI work for the search engine, which is the main contributor for Google's revenue. And we will see some other companies like xAI, for example. Elon has been invested a tremendous data center for GPUs. But this is the next level of, let's say, investment, because first we have to invest on this quantum chips, and there is a lot of research happening in that area. And again, like at Intel, you can find a lot of information as well, because we have a foundry business where we developed some new hardware, and Quantum was in the cooks for a long time for Intel. But there will be, like, beyond the labs, there will be production of that chipsets in the next 5 years, which means that many of the data center capabilities at global scale will have access to Quantum. So, which means that everything, as I mentioned, like drug discovery, predicting the crime, everything will be like more fast, and really getting that data to AI will accelerate the AGI process, as well as preparing us for artificial superintelligence.
Now, do quantum computers require less energy than what we have today, or more? Or
the state of energy is really depending on the hardware, as these are research projects right now. So it's really hard to define this is going to be the consumption of each, let's say, chip designed for quantum. Again, we don't have the specs from other companies, and also even at Intel, this is like in early R&D stage. But just expect, because these are like mega clusters of information gathering, it will require lots and lots of energy as well. But it's really hard to quantify that. We can do it for AI today because we know how many hours of GPUs required, what's the consumption per watt, but we don't have it in general for quantum.
Yeah, what's weird is that, yeah, I think they have to stay very, they have the environment, the physical environment has to stay very cold, because any, like when you observe something in quantum, it changes. And so it's very weird how, and I know like hardware companies like Intel are trying to solve it at the hardware level. And then like Google's trying to solve it at the software level, how to like improve the error rate. And because that's what's holding us back, from what I understand.
Exactly.
And then once we get the error rate up, then, oh my God, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. And all the early implementations today, like in 2025, is mainly on the software layer, because again, there is like lots of states of data, like which ones are really useful. Until now, we didn't have the system to evaluate like trillions of data, but with the power of AI, we can use the large language model as a reference, like how deep learning works, and we can apply that to quantum, and then we can understand like, hey, these are, let's say, the molecular structures for a drug discovery that like the helium is like combines with carbon at this state, and any other state is an impossible data. So you can just skip that probability. So again, it's really narrowing down the possibilities, because quantum will give us like a lot of probabilities. Again, it's thinking out of the box or out of the state, and every state will change. And so again, there's a huge interdependency between AI and quantum in the next 5 years.
Yeah, amazing. I don't know if this is your area of expertise, but I've heard a lot of AI researchers say, okay, one or two breakthroughs in algorithm, not just data of training, can help us. But then they say that there could be up to like even a million-fold improvement in the hardware, like transformers, and then the GPUs have memory, and that's helping us with the transformer algorithm. But is that an area where you study or know about? What are these hardware breakthroughs that can happen that will like really get us to another level of AI models?
Absolutely. And I will give an example. I believe sometimes thinking simple really helps to progress fast, and you really focus on the area. Ilya, who's now the founder of SuperSafe Intelligence, who left OpenAI, was at Google at a point of time, and they published a white paper in 2016. And it was like really an interesting paper about transformers, where it really simplified the view of it. It's all about attention. And they call the white paper as the all you need is attention. So because what they realized is if you mimic how our brain works on the neurological level, you connect the data between synapses, and then more data means more connections. And if you correlate those, you start to predict the next token. So our brain is the best, let's say, intelligence as we know. And we are trying to just mimic that with deep learning. And the transformer model, which is GPT stands for generative pre-trained transformers. So it just uses this simple thinking like attention. We need more attention. We need like more data, and just create the connections. And that's how we have like billions of dollars now poured into the training of AI models. So I believe like this is going to be a similar breakthrough, because on the, let's say, the Moore's law, which the price of every chipset will like go half down in every 16 to 18 months, and the speed is going to double. It has been valid for many years, but we are heading to a space where the human, let's say, capability to design some of the things are augmented with AI. So we have seen like many of the recent GPU designs and ASIC devices, we use AI at the foundry and the chipset design level, where AI is giving us like, hey, very basics, but getting the data from like only not one space, but wiring it backwards and getting rid of all the like long connections. It really helped many of the GPUs today in the market to accelerate faster. And you can just physically not put enough dies close to the memory, because as you said, everything needs to be in memory to build that neural network. So I believe, again, like long story, but I want to make sure we will use more and more AI solutions to co-create new AI hardware and quantum hardware in the near future. Today, it's just like a co-pilot in terms of like how Microsoft calls it, but almost AI helps you. It will be in very short period of time, it will be co-created with AI. But the future is, of course, AI creating itself with the help of quantum. That's a definitely a fantastic future for humanity.
So I'm curious. Okay, so the GPUs are really good because of what NVIDIA did a long time ago, and then it got popular now with training the models. But are there like theories on what you guys can do that are building hardware that will help the algorithms and the training and the data faster? Not just designing new hardware or design, but what's the theory behind the hardware and then associating it with improvement for the models?
Absolutely. So again, maybe I will unpack this for the listeners, because if we look at the history of the GPUs, Intel had a GPU, NVIDIA has a GPU in the market, AMD has a GPU, and graphical processing units are designed initially for accelerating the graphics function, and it requires a lot of math analytics. You need to solve big problems. Again, if you play the 4K game, you need like super sharp graphics and really instant moves. That requires a lot of magical skills on the math side. And especially with Bitcoin mining is literally solving a mathematical problem, and you need the fastest, let's say, processing unit, which at that time it was the graphical processing unit. And this is interesting coincidence, but like from 2011 to 2016, there has been a big improvement on the GPU side because of the Bitcoin and all the blockchains like Ethereum and you name it. But the researchers realized that if they use GPUs for the deep learning and neural networks, it is the fastest mathematical formula that you can have it in the market. So, of course, with that, on the Intel side, we have been invested in GPUs. We have GPUs in the market, Arc graphics, and many, like we had GPU Max, GPU Flex, but we had specific also AI accelerators. Intel acquired a company called Habana Labs from Israel, and Habana Labs had this Gaudi as an AI accelerator. And the difference between an AI accelerator and a GPU is the AI accelerator is really designed only for one task, and it's the deep learning and neural networks. So it's designed for heavily on the training side of the AI, but also it's suitable for the inferencing. So when the models have been used by the developers to extract the information. But moving forward again, I think there will be a clear path. GPUs will be more and more AI capable and designed for AI purposes. We are on the same path, so we have a trajectory to merge our GPU lineup with the AI accelerators. And again, like in 2026, we will have some of the early announcements around that. But this is a roadmap that we disclosed already. The industry will go in that space. So back to your question, there will be a lot innovation on AI accelerators specifically, because you need the high bandwidth memory, and like you need to get a better stage for, I call it the fine tuning, and specifically like when you have the human interaction, because all these models are trained, but without the right moderation, I will call it, they can just say something which you don't understand. So you really craft the output as give me an output like a Wikipedia article, start with a good summary, give me more, and then end with a summary. So it's the output. And this is like reinforcement learning is the technical term we call it. But there will be more and more because there will be more specialized models for retail, healthcare, manufacturing, governments. There will be sovereign AI clouds. Many of the citizenship activities will require some AI services. So imagine all this will require different level of depth in the chipset. And one of the things that I want to highlight is open source. January 2025 was a moment for the industry where I call it the DeepSeek movement, where China dropped a model which really shocked the world. It has the open weights, and OpenAI is working on open weights. Meta's Llama models are all open weights. So again, it's a open weights and open source. It's again, there's lots of terms we can unpack there, but that's the right approach for AI to be everywhere, because it shouldn't be just some frontier lab like OpenAI or Anthropic, like reaching to AGI and the rest of world suffers, versus everybody needs to get the latest and greatest. And then with the customized AI chipsets in the next 10 years, that this market will explode with differentiation by usage scenario. So I'm really optimistic that training will be there with big frontier models, but there will be more actually inferencing and maybe customized models for specific scenarios, even at the edge. And again, like I'm super excited about the future, bringing those solutions to scale.
What I don't understand is, okay, like they share the weights of their models, but they're not sharing like the training, the algorithms, the software. But, and I don't really understand that. Like, what's beneficial? Like, how do you leverage those weights? Like, why is that beneficial? Isn't it just too complex, these neural networks, to interpret these weights? Or like, how does that work? I don't even know how that works.
Exactly. Like, we can unpack that for the listeners. Like, when we say open source, the company shares the source code of the model. And
they don't
AI,
do that.
This is,
they don't do that.
Like, this is really risky. If the source code is shared globally, we all know that there is dark web, like many passwords, everything leaked. Just like we only see from the web browser 10% of the world. 90% is like somewhere underground. And this, like AI models, if used in a bad way, this can invent the next virus that might impact many people. This might hijack many banking systems. This can shut down governments because they will have the capability of AI to train some of the cyber attacks. So getting AI out of control is risky. So I don't think like we should open source all the AI process, but open weights is giving us maybe a clear indication on what is the like specific model weight on the decision making. Because the thing we don't know today as a like a user of these models is how did the model came up with that answer. So we know that it goes through some thinking process, which we call reasoning. But what was the source that really triggered that response? So, for example, a city is planning to expand the north or south. And you ask an AI, like, where should we build the next schools and the new districts of shopping malls? It says north. So, like, maybe somebody has been training the data because they have a land on the north. So like, how do you remove the bias from the system? So open weights will give you at least like how the model is using different algorithms in a sense that it's not biased on one person or one specific area, because this can happen, right? So that's the beauty of the open weights. And again, like the usage scenario is mainly for the model builders. You build a model like a frontier model, Claude from Anthropic, GPT 4.5, whatever, 5 will be the next one from OpenAI. But there will be Mistral, there will be 5 models from Microsoft. They all provide those weights to developers, because the key thing is the developers needs to make sure this is not a biased information, because they don't see what's happening on the background. So they have to build something on top. And we have all seen like Gemini models initially created like black Nazis. And it was like fun moments. And they had to put controls on top of it. With the weights, you know exactly where the error comes from, if there's an error, and you can really fix it on the reasoning stage. And again, I think that was a big contribution from DeepSeek. Kudos to the team providing that. They instantly hit the model downloads. They provided a very fine-tuned model, which everybody was thinking like you need GPU farms to build like training models. No, they just focused on, they call it mixture of experts, by the way. So they created this system of, if it's a math question, I have a math expert. If it's a literature question, then I have a literacy expert. They created like 120-ish experts in the model. And this really created like a fast response. So I believe, again, like the world will benefit from open weights. I don't think we are heading to open source at the frontier model. But for some of the solutions, I think open source will help us to build that framework. And specifically talking about, we have a platform called Open Platform for Enterprise AI, because we believe we need open standards. Like open source will definitely accelerate the enterprise adoption. Going back to the training, for example, majority of the training data is just like the Wikipedia content, Reddit content, everything is on the internet, it has been scraped. But this is only 2% of the data on the world. 98% of the data is behind the firewall. And they will never share this with OpenAI or Anthropic or Mistral. Like every company's like IP is technically their data, like historically. So how do we make sure the AI solutions they deploy on their own data center uses that data, not as a training for OpenAI's next model, but for their own next IP. So that's where the open source becomes so important. We partner with Linux Foundation on this one. So we said, this is the framework that you deploy AI, and you can have it on, if you want, AWS, Azure, GCP, but also on-premise. So you know that your data is secure, protected, and it's not leaving your really data center or premises at the long side. So again,
let me ask a question. Go back to open weights.
Please.
You go and ask it a question, and then if it gives an answer that's not right, then with an open source model, it'll tell you the weights? Or like, how do you... I've never used it. That's why, so maybe it's a layman question, but like, how do you use open source weights? Because there's probably
think of the weights as the, like, this is the learned parameters of a model. So like open weights means you can download, run, inspect, and like fine tune the model. This is a verification in my mind. Like, again, just to
I get it explain. Now. Okay.
So it is technically all the models have specific parameters, and you can just know what's the total parameter size.
Yeah, so you can ask and it'll give back the weights for a specific, whether you're doing deep reasoning or you're just asking a question, it'll tell you the weight went through. I got you. Okay.
That's interesting. And specifically, like, thinking about the benefits, like, this helps with transparency. This is going to help with fine-tuning, as I mentioned, because majority of the solutions, when you finish, you need to do the fine-tuning. The big thing is, of course, the bias detection. So if you're asking a question or like asking a video generation and it's giving you specific answers, then maybe you have to really look at the open weight as the token size and everything and understand if there's a bias. And also, this is really democratizing the AI research. So if you look at, a good example is Falcon from UAE. They did implemented some of the open weights and they're sharing globally. They're head-to-head almost with Llama from Meta. So that's definitely, and maybe on the other hand, the risk of the closed weights is, I mean, if you don't disclose the weights, there's a potential for manipulation. And specifically, I don't want to name any like a country leader, but if you ask some country leaders, is this person corrupted? The model tries to analyze and then suddenly stops. I cannot tell you that. So definitely, like, for some names, for some specific questions, the models has been manipulated by humans and like they stop to answer or they give you a complete different answer. And again, open weights will give us like, hey, is this accurate? It's just one source code line on the, or it's like thousands of different tokens are giving me the same. So it's not manipulated. And again, it's easy to validate inputs in that sense. And if you think like AI will help for regulatory and compliance for businesses, this is going to really an important one, because like, how do you trust the decisions AI made. So if it's open weights, you can just connect it with the source data, at least at the token level.
Yeah, that's great. And that helps a lot. Now, Sam Altman, I saw him at TED in Vancouver, and he implied that he was going to open source their weights. Is that happening, or is that true?
It
or
is.
Like,
again,
is that happening?
Closely working with them. I know this, and again, it's public information. Sam Altman mentioned that this will not be a simple model. So they will really challenge some of the metas of the world with Llama 4, for example. They're trying to hit, there are now scorecards of AI models. So there will be a lot of maybe competitive information compared to the others. But yeah, definitely OpenAI, for the first time in history, it will be an open model with open weight, which is
fascinating. Now, when will that happen? Do you know when that will happen?
Again, according to Sam Altman, it's 2025. I know the date, but I cannot disclose.
Yeah, sometime this year. We're only getting into close to only 6 months left, so it'll be happening soon.
Exactly, within this calendar year. So that's going to be fascinating.
So I checked out your LinkedIn. You said, on a mission to make every company an AI company. What does that mean?
So in my opinion, we are in a big transformation right now. So every company will be disrupted. This is big. People say, I'm using ChatGPT. I'm asking, what's the weather today? So it's not going to replace search or anything, but it's dramatically will change how we do business. And there is always a panic in the market on, oh my God, AI will took over jobs, take over some industries. And I'm an AI optimist. I know there will be a lot of benefits. So there will be harm, absolutely, because in order to grow AI, there will be use cases on new things and everyone will benefit from AI. So that's why you cannot stop implementing AI solutions or creating AI training. So because humanity will benefit from this. But for the companies, this is an existential threat. They have to invest. First of all, I have shared a couple of articles on Entrepreneur magazine as well. I call it shadow AI because I have started to see the leaders are afraid of AI and they are shutting down access to AI systems like ChatGPT or Perplexity or Anthropic. And this is insane.
Your CEOs are shutting it down for their company?
Exactly. Wow. You cannot access those AI tools. My advice to...
Let me ask you this really quick. What's the rationale for that? Why are they doing that?
I understand the technology. First of all, they don't want any leak from their IP to
they don't
want to
use their data to the models.
Because people, if they don't use properly, they will upload an NDA document on a ChatGPT public.
Yeah, it's too easy.
It's not, and then it will become a part of the training model for the next generation.
Yeah.
And as if you're a part of a model, you are there forever. So your IP is technically a global public domain and you lose your competitiveness. So
now, is that true even with the paid service? It's still, they keep your data?
No, back to your point, exactly. Using OpenAI as an example or Microsoft's AI services, there are options where these are enterprise options where the data is never leaving your premise. There are solutions called RAG, retrieval augmented generation, where you use this data in a secure, private, confidential. But completely shutting down access will lead to a data loss. People will find ways to use AI because actually experienced this in 2010 where the tablets like the iPads became into the workplace. People saw that, hey, I want to access from my phone, from my tablet to internet. And then the IT blocked it instantly. What they did, they bring their own device. So it was a BYOD. Yeah. It's happening with shadow AI. Employees are bringing their own AI to the work.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a security risk. So my recommendation for the business owners and leaders in the space, implement generative AI guidelines, work together with IT, do some sniffing of data if somebody is uploading a document, identify the website, but don't shut down the tools.
Yeah.
Provide the right tools to your employees. And one of the good ways is, again, an employee for a company for 17 years, I love to use Microsoft Copilot because that brings me and my team all the meeting summaries, notes from the emails, really dive into your data and just talk with it, generate dashboards. So this is like fascinating in terms of the time to market for many of the productivity tasks. But moving forward, back to your question, like I believe every company will be impacted by AI. So it is a matter of time that you have to have a SWOT team within your company on how to embrace AI. Like, how do we use AI for good in HR, in finance, in marketing, in sales, and in operations? So every department needs to understand what is almost a repetitive task, what's the intelligence I can use identifying this, and move the company in a direction, not laying off people. I'm not saying like AI will take over the jobs, but the people who use AI will be more valuable than who are not using AI. So eventually the companies will shift to the people who knows how to use AI. And then it's not AI taking the jobs. It's the people who know how to use. So as a result of that, like I'm super excited. A couple of months ago, I published my book, AI in Marketing. I'm a marketeer. Nice. So it's available on Amazon. So AI in Marketing by Nuri Kankaya. Maybe we will put it on the show notes as well. But I come up with a simple framework, again, like maybe referring back to book. It's the AIM framework: assess, implement, and measure. People just jump right into the tools all the time. Like, how do I use ChatGPT? How do I use Gemini? How do I use whatever? It's not about the tools. The tools will change. They will merge to something else. Maybe there will be a lot of acquisitions in the long run. But we have to start from assessment. So what are the functions and maybe, let's say, specific groups that will be transformed with AI in 6 months and a year time? Don't think of like in 5 years, because 5 years, everything will be changed. Like it will be too late. So start to incubate projects and really start with pilots and really try to accelerate the adoption by empowering your employees. Give them the tools like, hey, this is the enterprise license for ChatGPT. This is the Google Gemini's Pro 2.5 model. Go and develop something and then share back with the rest of the team members. So it will create an environment where innovation is appreciated. It's not seen as a threat. And my job, again, I clearly see myself as I'm living in this. Like I'm working with all these companies. I'm working with many others because Intel is in the center of AI journey. Like we are providing all this hardware and production capacities to everyone. And I feel obligated to share more about what's going to happen with quantum, what's going to happen with AI, because I clearly see it's day-to-day job for me. This is going to be a big disruption. If a company is left behind, it is really hard to gain back. Or if you're in like setting up a new company, this is the best time in history to set up something new because you have the intelligence of all the AI systems really easily. So it's fascinating.
It's interesting. You say you're an AI optimist. I am too, but I mean, there's going to both be augmentation and productivity, which you're talking about, and then there will be replacement. And
correct.
But I'm curious, are there tea leaves happening now? Microsoft lays off 6,000 developers and program managers like just a day or two ago, and then unemployment is not quite where it is. Like, what's your point of view? Like, I'm sure you stay up on what's happening. Is that happening because of AI or what's happening?
So I will go back to like the basics of the AI training only happens when you have a structured data in place, and coding is very structured. Like you literally tell computer what to transform into a machine code, and really compilers are doing that for us. Either you use C++, Python, or like whatever language you want to use. So this is the first area AI is like awesome at. And if you look at some of the coding tools, GitHub Copilot was one of them, but now there are new tools called vibe coding tools, like Cursor is one of them. I personally use lovable.dev. It's like, I just explain, bring me a web application. I'm a developer by heart. Like I was a computer engineer. And then of course I became a marketing leader eventually, but I still love to code. But with vibe coding, everyone becomes a coder. So the critical thing is like Microsoft has 220,000 people roughly. Like again, the number is changing every day. And majority of them is R&D employees. And Microsoft is a software company. Same applies to Oracle, same applies to Google. You have all the roles on like testing, program management, software developer, engineer, 1, 2, like levels of depth. But AI is achieving a point where this is not just a co-creator with you. Like you can just give AI the testing, and AI as an agency, the AI agent will be exactly doing a good, even better job than a tester. And for each development team, there's like a testing group. So do we need the testers anymore? I don't think so. So there is definitely a direct impact to some jobs. Think of the self-driving cars. I personally drive a full self-driving car. Initially, maybe in the first 100 miles, I was curious, okay, can it take this turn? If it's an old stop, okay, not everybody really obeys the rules. So like how it's going to really perform. And it performed well. So like I almost shut down my brain in that driving experience. I let my truck to go by itself. And then like I enjoy listening podcasts. I think about it. I brainstorm. I'm still in the driver's seat, but I'm not touching the steering wheel or any acceleration. And this is going to, if you think about the driver as a job, like taking someone from point A to point B, I don't trust some of the Uber drivers, to be honest. Like when I'm going to the airport and I see these statistics, like the potential accident during the Uber ride is bigger than the plane crash. So like it's all okay. Yeah. Like I'm
okay, done. The statistics are there, but it is weird. Like you see these Waymo coming in, walking out of the Sheraton, and like this Waymo car's driving comes in and parks itself and then just leaves. Like no one even got on it, gets it and just leaves. And it is weird. Like it is weird.
When I'm on the driver's seat, I'm loving it. So because I can clearly see every time I drive my car, it also helps to transform it to a better stage because it's a new training data. Maybe going back to the same, how the like autonomous driving is big because we don't have physical world. All these cars from Tesla or Google's Waymo, they are trained on a digital twin, which is an omniverse, where all these cars are like taking like millions of hours of miles virtually. So it's creating a training data set with all the people jumping into the street, like not obeying the rules, going on the red light. And this is a part of the training data set. So I believe the next maybe 5 to 10 years, we will have more physical AI in our lives with, I don't want to call it just like humanoid robots because it's just a visible component, but every aspect of our life will be AI infused, which means that there will be like, again, everywhere in our house, there are like pockets of Alexas, some Nest systems for like weather and like all this climate systems. But it was an IoT implementation. With physical AI, we will have more jobs impacted. So this is for sure. I believe this will create new categories, like new jobs in the near future. So I'm excited about that part. But there will be, again, the works that we do will change how we do it, and it will create new possibilities for many others.
Yeah, I agree there. And so what question didn't I ask you that you wish I would have asked that you want to share with everybody?
I will ask maybe one more thing, which I'm an optimist, but I also believe if we don't get AI under control, it will go out of control pretty quickly. And humans are not going to be really eligible to stop anything going on. So that's a 10 to 20% possibility, which is a big number. It should be like very minimal. And I published a couple of papers. Anthropic did the same. In the test environment today, when they say, hey, do whatever it takes to make this happen, and AI tries to do everything on a like a managed environment, and they will not disclose this model to the world because then the result is going to be, if somebody asks, on whatever cost, get me this, and whatever cost means kill humans, get rid of humanity, it might be anything. So I believe in blockchain. Again, for the listeners, blockchain is an immutable ledger. So what it makes unique is like a ledger on your maybe company's accounting, you can never delete. Like accounting works like you get money, you borrow money, you pay salaries, you pay your taxes, but everything is a line item. And when you want to see what was my 2024 tax, you do all the transactions in 2024 and you find a number. You just don't delete and add and you don't, because it has to be traceable. So we have to do the same with AI decisions. So
good point.
Many governments will start using AI. Many companies will start using AI. And we have to be able to be tracing back to the origin of the discussion, like how this decision is made. And I will tell you, a human will not be able to do that. So we will have AI auditors auditing the AI decision, unfortunately, because it will be so deep to understand. But if we don't log it properly on a blockchain, I think it's really easy for AI systems to manipulate the data. So it has to be immutable. So I think this is like the basics. If you ask me, like, what's a big call to action for policymakers, like any industry creation, AI needs regulation. So I'm not against it, but it has to be pretty quick and fast, because there will be AI, I will call it AI citizens. Today we are discussing like who is deported from Europe or US with looking at nationalities and passports. How do we deal with AI citizens? Like all these AI agents are coming in a form or shape, like almost alive. And then we will start paying them if an AI agent is delivering a task. And are they going to pay taxes? How are they going to be treated? Is AI systems will vote in the long run? Are we going to merge with AI? Like, again, maybe somebody's spouse will be an AI. So this is like the reality is in the next 10 years, like the culture will shift dramatically. And I believe we are the last carbon-based systems, in my opinion, because AI will enhance us crazy. Again, I hope we can see this like healthcare improvements, because our body has errors and we die 80, 90 years old in an average, which is not fair, because all this knowledge accumulated over the years, you're just like living and then starting from scratch with new things. But I believe the security and management and defining roles of AI is super critical. That needs more depth thinking globally. It's not just one country, one organization, but globally we have to make sure we are doing the right next steps, starting with making every company AI company, but almost making every nation an AI nation.
Yeah, that's a really good thoughts that you gave there. And yeah, there's a lot of problems there with the race to become the top AI versus security. But it's scary and it's exciting.
It is exciting, but it's also scary. So it's an interesting balance in between for sure.
Yeah. Well, so if people wanted to learn more about your book or learn more about you, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm really active on LinkedIn. So if you search Nuri Kankaya on LinkedIn, start following me and you can reach out with messages there. And also if you search for my name on Amazon again, I have this book, but like I have a couple of other books. This is my sixth one.
Oh, wow.
This is the first one on AI specifically. I had a Web3 book, which I published early on, and I'm working on AI for business professionals book. It's going to be broader because this is in a domain of marketing. Yeah, those are the core areas. Like check my LinkedIn profile, and then urikankaya.com is my personal website where you will see all my emails, and shoot me an email. Again, I love to hear feedback too.
Amazing. Amazing. I learned a lot. Really enjoyed. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks a lot, Dean, for having me on the show.
All right. Thank you. Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.